and it's KVC Arts Now on KVCR Arts and Entertainment, as well as the people and places providing it. I'm David Fleming with Lee Mills, Executive Director of the Palm Springs Friends of the Philharmonic. Lee, thank you so much for joining me for this.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here today.
Oh, I'm looking forward to this, and I want to hear about your background and some of the accolades I've noticed. But first, I'd like to hear a bit about the organization. We'll be going back and forth a bit. If you could address the beginning of the Palm Springs Friends of the Philharmonic, as this is not a symphony, but rather a group which brings concerts to town.
Correct. Yeah, Palm Springs Friends of Philharmonic actually started back in the 1970s as Palm Springs Friends of the Los Angeles Philharmonic. And it was a group of people that wanted to bring orchestra music performances out here to the Coachella Valley. And they got together and they paid for having the Los Angeles Philharmonic bus out here to the Valley and do concerts. And over the last 52 years, we have just kept growing, and our sort of reputation and prestige has grown along with that. And now we attract a lot of symphony orchestras from all over the world. We present a 6-concert series every year at the McKellen Theater. It happens during the season from January through March or into April sometimes. And we just have the best orchestras in the world. This coming season, for example, we have the Chicago Symphony Orchestra conducted by Ricardo Muti, the Minería Symphony Orchestra from Mexico conducted by Carlos Miguel Prieto, and Pacho Flores on the trumpet for that one. And they'll actually be playing a piece by Paquito de Rivera called the Venezuelan Concerto, which won the 2023 Latin Grammy for Best Classical Contemporary Composition. And that recording that won the Grammy was with this orchestra, this conductor, and this trumpet player.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, yeah. And then we also have the Los Angeles Philharmonic coming, sort of a throwback to the traditional beginnings of our organization.
Yeah.
And we are so happy this season we have Gustavo Dudamel coming with them to conduct. And this is his last year as music director for the LA Phil before he goes on to New York. So that's going to be a very special concert as well. We have Academy of St. Martin coming with Joshua Bell, who is both going to be playing violin and conducting the orchestra. We have a San Diego Symphony with Rafael Payari. That's always a big favorite with our audience. This time they're bringing the soloist Leonidas Kavakos on the violin. It's going to be a fantastic concert. And then our season ends with the Dallas Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Fabio Luisi, who of course used to be music director at the Met, a very accomplished conductor. He's coming out with Helene Grimaud, a very world-famous pianist who's just absolutely spectacular. So we'd focus on finding the very best orchestras and soloists and conductors that we can. And we really do bring the best of the best out here to the Coachella Valley.
Oh, it's an incredible season coming up. And again, it doesn't really start until January. That's when the first concert is. But there are other things that apply the rest of the year that we'll talk about here and there as we go. A little bit about you, though. As an assistant conductor, what are you doing during the symphony? Will you step up for one of the pieces? Or how does that work when you've got a conductor and then, as you just mentioned, the assistant conductor?
Yeah, so as assistant conductor, I spoke about with the Lyric Opera of Chicago, but also, you know, many of my first jobs were assistant conducting jobs, like when I was in Rio de Janeiro with the Brazilian Symphony Orchestra, that started as an assistant conducting job. And then when I moved to Seattle with the Seattle Symphony, I was associate conductor, but my function was pretty similar in assisting the conductors. As assistant conductor, you're responsible to know and understand all of the music, of course, in the same way that the conductor is. And as long as the conductor is healthy and well, then mostly you sit in the rehearsals out in the hall where the audience is, and you're like an extra pair of ears for the conductor. And during the breaks, you meet with the conductor and you say, you know, I couldn't really hear the flutes in this section because they're getting drowned out by whatever. And you sort of help the conductor with the balances, especially if there's a soloist out in front of the orchestra, like a piano soloist or something. It's very helpful to have a pair of ears out in the audience to make sure that the balances are all coming through effectively. Sometimes pieces require an extra conductor. Maybe there's a backstage element, like you have got 4 trumpets backstage or something, and somebody needs to conduct them to bring them in at the right time. So that could be part of the job. Sometimes the conductor just wants to go out and hear it in the hall too. So I've had many times when I was at the Lyric Opera in Chicago, for example, I was sitting behind Maestro Mazzola, and right in the middle of one of the finales to one of the acts, the whole chorus is on stage and everybody's out singing, and he just, without even stopping, just turned around and waved at me, and I went up and he handed me the baton and walked off into the hall so that he could hear it. So he just passed it off to me and I conducted so that he could hear.
Mid-movement?
Yeah, right in the middle of the music. We didn't even stop.
Oh, good God. Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was pretty fun. And then The other function is you're sort of like an insurance policy, right? Because if you've sold 2,000 tickets to a concert and the conductor had some bad sushi right before the concert's supposed to start, you need the show to go on. If anything happens to the conductor, the assistant conductor steps in and takes over the show.
At times it sounded like the dramaturg, and then other times the understudy. So there's and the assistant role. I never thought about that, about, say, having a person backstage taking care of the whatever the timpanis that you're not seeing, or just whatever the case is. That's really incredible. That's really cool. I just learned something here.
And there's been times, you know, sometimes with older editions of music or music that's more rare or hasn't been out that often, just like happens in anything else, there can be typos in the music, misprinted notes or questions about should this be a B or a B flat. And, you know, sometimes my job is I sit out in the hall while I'm listening for balance and everything. I have the score open and I'm circling all the wrong notes that I hear. And then I go up, you know, during the breaks and check the parts and the musicians to make sure that they've got the right notes printed in their parts, because every now and then you do get misprints.
So at intermission or whenever, you come walking backstage or down to the pit or whatever the case is, and maybe the third chair violin, they're just holding their breath, not knowing you're about to, oh gosh. Well, okay, something else that I noted before moving on to more about the Palm Springs Friends of the Philharmonic. You were conducting for quite some time between, I'm just going to list off some, and I will be including nowhere near all of them, but the Brazilian Symphony Orchestra, Seattle Symphony, you mentioned, Chicago Symphony, Baltimore Symphony, LA, just, and really so many more. But now, with this said, with so much background, you were named in 2022 New Artist of the Month. This was by Musical America. How long were you around, and yet you were still considered a new artist in this case?
Yeah, you know, conductors' careers are measured in decades and not years, as
Ah,
I
there
have
it
a
is.
mentor who always says. So I'm 38. In terms of conductors, I'm still very much a young conductor. It just takes so much to get a career off the ground as a conductor. And, you know, I just started my first position as music director of the Greenville Symphony Orchestra, actually, this past year. So I'm still very much conducting and still very much at the beginning of that career. And sort of that transition from being an assistant conductor into being music director, that's kind of when you're emerging really into the world as your own artist. You're no longer the assistant, right? You're beginning to take your own form as an artist. And yeah, Musical America, that actually happened because there was a really big concert in Seattle that had been a couple of months earlier, actually. There was a world premiere of a double harp concerto by Hannah Lash, which was 45 minutes long, a brand new piece of music. And then Amy Beach's Gaelic Symphony, which is about 45 minutes long as well, and not very often performed. And what I mentioned earlier about the conductor getting ill, the conductor was actually the music director, Thomas Dausgaard, for that concert on the Tuesday of that week. I guess he was really sick, and I got a call and was told that I would have to do the rehearsal, the first rehearsal for that concert. And I did that rehearsal, and then the next day he was still sick, so I did the next rehearsal, and I ended up actually doing the whole week in both of the concerts, which is really, when you're assistant conductor, that's really quite a big thing to do, and with such new music and everything. And they, Musical America, actually had a reporter in the audience because of the world premiere of the Hannah Lash concerto, which was a big deal. And that was sort of the start of that. And then they actually ended up coming back to another one of my concerts that I conducted and really enjoyed that. So I was really honored when I got named the New Artist of the Month in Musical America.
Of course. There was a project that I read about that I just find fascinating, and I need a few more details. This was initiated in 2018 in São Paulo, and you brought classical music to thousands of new listeners through performances in unusual settings. One example, playing Vivaldi to a crowd of over 10,000 EDM fans. Okay, the idea. Who was sitting around at the table and said, "This is a good idea. Let's do this now."
Me.
Way to go, Lee.
Yeah. So there is a nightlife producer in Brazil that owns a couple of clubs. There's a really big club in São Paulo and a really big club in Rio de Janeiro. And when I say big, I mean like the capacity is 3,000 people. These are massive nightclubs. And I was in one, and just the way that it's designed in Rio, it reminds me a lot of an opera house. Like you look and there's the main floor and there's a huge stage that the DJ was on. You know, big LED screen behind that, but then wrapping around the main floor for two more stories up were these balconies that kind of wrap around very much in the way you see if you look up La Scala or any of these Italian opera houses. It was very reminiscent of this. And I was looking at the space and all the activities. There's like acrobats in the air, there's lighting, there's lasers, there's the giant video wall, like these LED strip lights that kind of surround the whole space. And it was such a beautiful space, and everybody's so excited to be there. And I thought, you know, I think that there's some classical music that could be paired with this kind of an environment and create a new way of listening to classical music by adding the lighting and the acrobatic artists and all of these other things to it. And so I actually had a friend who knew the owner of this company, and I told him about this whole project I wanted to do, which I still haven't fully realized the vision that I had, which is to do a whole hour and a half concert in a setting like this, and have the orchestra dressed up, not in tuxedos, but maybe like rock musicians, and have a runway out down the middle of the dance floor where the violin soloist goes out and they're whipping their hair around while they're playing the solo, and just create a whole new environment but present the same music. And he loved this idea, and we started doing a few pilot, smaller bite-sized versions of it. And the biggest one was we did the movement from the summer from Vivaldi to open for the main DJ, who was Ofer Nissen, who came from Israel, at their birthday festival that they did out at this race car track, actually. And so they had this huge, giant stage. It was 60 meters wide, you know, with all the lighting and the screens and the lasers and all of those things. And we actually had fireworks. I was listening to a click track so that we could synchronize the playing with the fireworks.
Oh.
And yeah, there were 10,000 people at this festival, and we opened for the main act of the night, and it was amazing. Everybody whipped out their phones. People were blown away. It was very successful. And then the next year, we made a music video using Tchaikovsky's Swan Lake that they used and incorporated into their same party on their birthday the next year. They sort of created this music video element that they were showing at the festival. We didn't have the full orchestra on stage for that one, but that was really cool. I think classical music, people don't necessarily think of it as popular, but a lot of it when it was written was insanely popular and still holds a lot of its weight today. I think that there's so much we can change about the way that we present it. You know, like our industry is a little bit still old-fashioned in a lot of ways. And part of that is on purpose. You know, some pieces of music, you do want to sit in silence and really contemplate and be still. But a lot of classical music is really banging. Like, it's really fun and energetic, and, you know, why not play it at a party? And I think that we can really experiment with different ways that we are creating these classical music experiences, and we can try to find ways that are more appealing in today's very fast-paced, social media-driven environment where everything has to be flashy. Like, there's no reason why classical music can't be flashy, too.
No, absolutely. Okay, between selections from the Four Seasons, or you mentioned Swan Lake, this was classical, or let's say orchestral music in its purest form, or did you, it's an EDM thing. Was there a...
It's in its purest form.
Okay.
You know, there's a lot of people out there who are doing mashups where they're putting a DJ with Beethoven, or, you know, they're combining things, which of course has its place, and I absolutely love that people are being creative around that. My purpose with this project is showing people that the actual piece of music, like Beethoven's Fifth or any number of things like that, are awesome pieces of music and don't need to be altered. We just need to change the environment sometimes. We don't always do, but for certain crowds and audiences to reach them, we need to change the environment we're presenting it in. But I think that the music on its own stands by itself. You know, the only difference is in a traditional symphony orchestra concert, there are no microphones, right? The orchestra, it's all acoustic sound.
Right.
But for these types of settings where it's such big crowds, or you want people to feel comfortable going to the bar and ordering a drink while they're listening, like, it needs amplification just so that people aren't drowning it out with their talking or whatever. That's the only difference that I put into it. But the actual piece itself, I don't alter or add any sort of electronics to or anything like that.
I'm David Fleming in conversation with Lee Mills, Executive Director for the Palm Springs Friends of the Philharmonic. We are hearing about the upcoming season, special opportunities that the Friends of the Philharmonic provides, and so much more. Now, Lee, did you come into the organization as Executive Director, or were you on the board and you sort of worked your way up, as it were?
No, I started as Executive Director.
Okay.
During the pandemic, you know, we've had these sort of pandemic scares before in my lifetime where, you know, I remember SARS when I was in school and a couple of other things. And it seems like everything kind of freezes for a week or two and then relaxes again. But this time it didn't end. Lockdown happened and it just didn't end, right? We started in March with all the lockdowns, and by November, we still couldn't have people in the concert hall. Seattle Symphony was very creative. That's where I was working at the time, and they launched their own paid live streaming platform. So we were able to have about 30 musicians on stage with the correct social distancing, but we couldn't have audiences in the hall. So we did a live stream of the concerts, and people would subscribe to the platform and be able to still watch them on their TVs at home. But just thinking more broadly about the industry and my career and everything I've ever done, I was starting to panic. I was like, what if we can't ever have concerts again with an audience? What am I going to do? And I was talking to a friend of mine who's an executive assistant to CEO level officers at big companies, and she said, you know, you actually have a lot of skills that would apply in the business world if the music industry just completely shrivels up and dies. But what would make you most effective and be able to get a good start if you have to switch careers would be get your MBA. So I went to school during the pandemic. I got my MBA. And the more I learned about it, the more I realized that that education was actually practical, even in the performing part of music and my role as a conductor, you know, being able to manage the people in the orchestra and the psychology behind it and designing programs that are appealing to the audience, you know, thinking about it like market research when you're designing a new product that you want to launch. You know, if I think about the programming that way, I can create effective programming that resonates with the audience. And simultaneously, performances started up again, and I was able to resume my career as a conductor. But now I've caught this bug through all the things I've learned through my MBA that I really wanted to run a business. And I feel like I have some ideas, and from what I've observed through the various places that I've been, you know, some ways that I think our business of classical music could be done better and more effectively. And I just wanted an outlet for that. So I started looking for jobs that wouldn't require me to give up my artistic career as a conductor, but would allow me to have that outlet to use the knowledge that I learned in my MBA and the intuition that I have about the classical music business and try out some of the ideas that I have. And I had a friend who is a friend of a board member here at the Palm Springs Friends of Philharmonic, and he knew about this job posting. He was like, oh, here's an interesting job that sounds like exactly what you're looking for. So I applied for it and I got the job. And because our season is so short, just from January through March, and we do six concerts, it is a year-round job, but it's not a job that takes 100% of my week and my hours. So I can keep conducting, you know, and keep that career going at the same time.
Right. Well, now about the Palm Springs Friends of the Philharmonic. Beyond bringing symphonies to town, the Palm Springs Friends of the Philharmonic has a mission of exposing young musicians to orchestral music by not just inviting local music students to the concerts. I mean, it's one thing to invite the students, but you actually provide tickets. So talk about this a bit, please. Tickets, and there's scholarships at the collegiate level as well.
Yeah, so this is what we currently have, and I'm very proud of it. I grew up blue-collar family in Montana, and there weren't any professional musicians in my family or even anywhere in my orbit. But the reason that I was able to have the life and career and follow the passion that I have is because of the amount of exposure I was given as a student to go to the symphony orchestra, to go to free community events, and be constantly around this thing that became my passion. So music education for me is a big, big thing. And these programs existed before I came here. The scholarships, we give $5,000 scholarships to music students who go on to study music anywhere in the world, but that are from the Coachella Valley. We also give scholarships for students to attend summer camps, to go to AeroBear or Idlewild or even far-flung, like we have a student who's going to Interlochen this summer. We do give them financial assistance so that they can pursue those. And we also work with individual teachers who have their music classes in the local schools. We send out an email and we invite them to bring their classes to one of our concerts. So each of our concerts, we set aside 20 tickets that we donate to the school to bring their students to the concert. And that's actually a pretty significant chunk of tickets. If you look at the revenue, it would have been $14,000 worth of tickets that we gave away last year. So that's also really important. Our board just finished a strategic planning process this year where education really bubbled up to the top. It's something that's a strong priority for our board, and we are now looking at ways to create new programs and revamp our existing programs and add a lot more to what we're offering to the community and to students in the Coachella Valley. I'm about to hire a new staff position, which will be our education coordinator, who will work with the local schools. We're forming a partnership right now with a couple of really important institutions and big orchestras that we're going to implement not this coming season, but in the 2026-2027 season to start a really robust music education program that's much more interactive and goes out into the schools, and then also will bring thousands of kids into the McCallum Theater to see orchestral performances. One thing that I'm really excited that I can now talk about, because we just presented it to the Cathedral City Council meeting, is that this coming January, we are going to be presenting the Mineria Symphony Orchestra from Mexico. In addition to our subscription concert in the McCallum, we will be presenting them at the Cathedral City Amphitheater on Sunday, January 25th, in a free outdoor concert that is going to turn into sort of a mini music festival of sorts. So we're hoping to feature other local organizations. We're going to have master classes for high school students happening in parallel, and then the afternoon will culminate in a live performance of this symphony orchestra in the amphitheater at Cathedral City, and that's going to be completely free to the public. So we're really looking at revamping the ways we connect with young people out here in the Coachella Valley.
Oh, that's really cool. Here's something that I wondered about. Most of the concerts, I believe all but one of them, start at 7:30, and there's a pre-concert talk at 6:30. Is this you or some music historian? Maybe Joshua Bell is speaking when he should be rosining up his bow.
Yeah, so a couple of years ago, actually, we did a couple of tests of the pre-concert talks, and the organization hired academics to come in and talk about the music, the composers, and how the pieces were written, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And then when I started, something that I've done as a conductor is I have done the pre-concert talks with a staff member from the organization. So when I'm guest conducting, or even in Greenville, where I'm music director now, our pre-concert talks are the executive director and I sit on the stage and we just have a conversation. And we talk about what I think about the pieces and what my inspirations were, or making the program or whatever. And I really love these formats because I feel like you get to know the artist a little bit better. And so, you know, I've been working in this business for 20 years now at very high level. So I have all of these friends, honestly, and many of them are the artists that are coming through here. So what I did last year was I just sent my friends a text message when we're planning these things. And I said, hey, would you be willing to sit on the stage with me for half an hour and let me interview you? And almost all of them said yes. Now, the artists that I don't have a personal connection with and I can't pull those strings, I'll go to their management and I'll ask if they might be willing to have a conversation. Some of them don't. Obviously, people want to concentrate before the performance. They don't necessarily want to be out on stage talking about themselves. And in those cases, we do hire somebody to come in, a musicologist, or somebody to come in and present about the pieces of music. And they might play some excerpts over the sound system and say, this is what's happening here, this is what this means, and kind of guide the audience through. So it's going to be a combination of conversations and also a little bit more of a lecture educational situation.
Gotcha. When picking the season, are you ever going off of what they'll be performing, or is it just booking the symphony, knowing that, you know, the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, you're not like, okay, we'll hire you depending on what you're doing?
Yeah, it's a little bit of a combination of both. It's so expensive to move an orchestra around that they usually have to put together a series of concerts out here in Southern California. They might play in Santa Barbara, or they'll play in Orange County, or, you know, in other places as well. But the conversations start very early. So I've already mostly confirmed all of the orchestras who will be coming in our 2027 season, for example. And usually when the conversation starts, you know, Chicago Symphony says, we're thinking about doing a tour. Would you take us? And I'll say, yes, here is a list of all of the music that we've performed really recently. So I'd rather not repeat that while you're thinking about what you want to bring out here. Could you avoid these? Or maybe I'll say, you know, we haven't had a lot of Stravinsky recently. Do you have anything you could bring? I'll give them suggestions, but the music director is ultimately the person who's going to decide what they're performing. And, you know, for like Chicago Symphony with Riccardo Muti, even if we end up doing a piece we did last year, I'm still going to say yes. But are flexible and they work, you know, with us. And I've managed to keep some variety in our programming. And we do surveys of our audience members. And I do know that they would like to hear a little bit more of that. Or, you know, maybe it's we've done too much Beethoven recently and they want some 20th century music. You know, so I do give these tour managers all of this information and they use that when they try, because they want to give us what we want as well.
Of course.
So, I found that people have been really helpful working with me and trying to shape the program, but there's no ultimatums or anything given to them. For example, the Mineria Symphony Orchestra, we had a couple of options that they presented with soloists, because when you're playing every night, they're not going to have the same soloist every night because that's exhausting. Like, you can't perform 2 weeks in a row without stopping as a soloist. So, for example, they had a couple of soloists to select from, and I chose Pacho Flores because I know he really resonates with our audience. So, yeah, it's a little bit of both.
There is a bit of fluidity to that. That's really cool. That I don't know why. I could see a rock band dropping one tune for another, but to have a symphony, if you say that you haven't had much Stravinsky, they could maybe drop the Bolero and bring in the Firebird Suite or whatever the case is. So that's really cool that there is that kind of thing. And also the fact that I never thought about that. I mean, going through college and then off to your MFA, and then it's all the connections that you would be making. You can bring in whomever you may want to sit on stage and talk. That's just really, all these things are coming together, looking at it through the educational level and then finally that performance track. Just a couple of things before we wrap, and I appreciate your time, by the way. With Academy of St. Martin in the Fields, with Joshua Bell not only performing violin but also serving as conductor. So here's the thing, when Bell is playing the violin, is that when the assistant conductor comes up?
No, he'll actually conduct from the front of the stage while he's playing the violin.
While he's playing.
It's really quite fun, you know, using his body language and bobbing the end of his violin. Or the thing about these orchestras is they don't need a metronome up there. You don't have to give them every single beat, right? You're giving them gestures and phrases and emotions and all of those things. And he might turn a little bit around and look at the cellos and give them a nod or, you know, those kinds of things. But it's really quite fun to see.
Well, it's almost the Frank Zappa approach. I don't know if you've ever seen him conducting, but
yeah,
it's pretty wild.
Yeah, very much, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, to close out, we spoke about the season earlier, and as a reminder, people can simply go to psphil.org, that's psphil.org, to remind themselves of the season. The first concert is coming up January 2026. But now, what goes on the rest of the year is that, in addition to concerts, we mentioned that there are scholarship opportunities and other sorts of things available to students. But now, with that, we mentioned this earlier, that the Board of Directors hopes that every subscriber can become a member of the PS Phil by making an annual donation. So here's the question there. Can a person donate specifically to, say, the scholarship fund? Or is it a case of donations just come in and then whomsoever it is on the board, they disperse them in whatever direction, you know, as the board sees fit?
Oh, the donors can absolutely make a designation if they wish. We have a few donors who do designate their donations towards education. We have one donor this year, our first time, who specifically wanted to fund a scholarship. And I said our scholarships for each student are $5,000. So this donor cut a $5,000 check to us to add our capacity to grant an additional scholarship than we normally do, which is fantastic. But yes, of course, to the greatest need or to our general fund is always the most helpful to us. But if somebody wants specifically to support music education, they can certainly make that designation on their donation.
Oh, that's quite beautiful. And again, psphil.org for more information, not only on the season coming up, but about the Palm Springs Friends of Philharmonic and ways to donate as well. This was a true pleasure, Lee, to be able to speak with you about this.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure to be on here.
On this edition of KVC Arts, I've been speaking with Lee Mills, Executive Director for the Palm Springs Friends of the Philharmonic. And once again, psphil.org. And with that, we wrap up another edition of KVC Arts. Thanks again to Lee Mills, as well as to Jeff Hawker. And here at KVCR, thanks to Rick Dulock, Sandy Hodela, Zach Mays, Champ Chipman, and Shireen Awad. Music beds and themes heard on KVC Arts, composed and performed by Sean Longstreet. So thanks to Sean as well. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support.